Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 400.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we celebrate having said hello, hello for the 400th time. That's right. This show is very aged. This is the 400th episode. We are the Biden of podcasts. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and I'm just a bag of fossilized remains holding a microphone. That's all I am. But I honestly have to—I have to admit that I actually feel like I'm Benjamin Buttoning in the podcast world, because every podcast feels like the first one, you know? And that's because of the listeners and because of the panelists that keep me going. Today, we're gonna do a little political retrospective when we earnestly ask the question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? We'll also look at the Katie Britt phenomenon. We'll look at Wendy's dynamic pricing kerfuffle, and we'll ask if you need a wallet anymore. And dear God, why can't we stop rushing on this 400th episode? Why can't we stop rushing? We're gonna talk about the phenomenon of the constant rush we're all in. Did I rush through my intro? A little bit. Okay, joining me today to celebrate this very momentous podcast episode, to me and to no one else, it's not really momentous, is a comedian and host of the Political Orphanage podcast, which you must listen to. I've been on it. Everyone's been on it. It's a slutty podcast that way. And it's so fun and so funny, owing primarily to the wonderful man behind it, Andrew Heaton. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Nagin. I am so happy to see you, and I'm so excited to be back. And also, I'm old friends with Benari, so this is going to be super fun. I'm honored and thrilled to hang out with you both.
You just received a ding from Fake the Nation. That's a ding in my mind because you said the name of the other panelists before I did.
Oh, shoot.
Which is a fucking
shoot.
Fake the Nation faux pas.
I just
okay?
ripped the rug
you
out.
Already,
oh, no.
You already fucked up this whole show.
All right. All right.
Listeners, I want you to go back to a time in your life when you hadn't heard that name.
Yeah.
And I so that I can say we are also joined by a writer, a comedian. You've seen him perform all over the country. He's so fucking funny. In fact, he's the funniest man in the Pentagon. And he's, I don't know. He may have been on the first or second episode of this podcast. I don't remember specifically. And one day a historian, maybe Meacham, who does all those presidential histories, will look into the Fake the Nation archives to see who was on the first or second episode. It is the one and only, my very good friend, Benari Poulton. Hey, Benari.
Hey, it is so wonderful to be here, have the surprise of my being here ruined by Andrew, which is just a classic.
You know, I just wanted to steal fantastic. Everybody's wind. That's what I wanted to do.
I think when we go back, historically speaking, I believe you've introduced me as being on the show millions of times. So I think I have the distinction of being on more shows than actually exist.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm so proud to be here.
And that's actually, it's like the premise for the next Christopher Nolan movie is how exactly you were able to do that.
Yes.
You know, because for every historical movie he does, he then does a time-bending one.
Right.
So that's going to be the premise of the next one.
So and happy that's to be really on great. Fake the Tenant.
Remember he killed a guy in the future and then it was like, and then the bullet showed up like 5 years later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something
and
like that.
And then it was
that.
Him.
Okay.
Kill it. Yeah.
And then it was that guy.
It's always him.
Okay.
It's always that guy.
That's the plot of Tenet, by the way. I think we summarized that very accurately and everybody understands what we're saying. Before we get into the show, I just want to let everyone know that I have an eye allergy. So if I look like I'm going, you know, Hunchback of Notre Dame, but just like in one eyeball, like that's why. And the fun thing is if you want to see my eyeball, you can do that on YouTube because this show is now on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/Nagin Farsad. Mostly, I think you should just subscribe to my YouTube channel because we're populating it with content. I've got to be honest, I've neglected YouTube most of my adult life. No more shall I neglect YouTube.
Now's the time. You're really getting in on the ground floor, I think.
Yeah. So, I, you know, this new
it.
Thing that all the kids are talking about. But I just figured like there's a lot of like opportunities for Proud Boy content or whatever. And I want to get in on the action and start
my own
Proud Boy channel.
Do TikTok before it gets banned later today.
Oh, that's right. Today, we're not even talking about that, but how topical, Andrew. This is why we have you on the show.
Thank you.
Because you know one, maybe three things about what's happening in America aujourd'hui.
And I know the pulse of teenagers of America in a very non-creepy way. I meant that more hip rather than creepy. That was supposed to be hip.
That was supposed to be hip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is that a Billie Eilish poster in the background? He's so hip. Before we also get it, so go to YouTube and subscribe as your 400th episode gift to me. But also go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. You can support the show for as little as $4 a month. Oh my God, patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Thank you to everyone who supports the show in the very many ways you do. And the primary way is just listen, but also tell your friends and grab their phones. Go to their podcast app and subscribe to this show. They need a strong hand, okay? Let us get into it with topic number one. We're going to talk about some items and culture. First up, Wendy's, the burger chain. I was going to say beloved burger chain, but I'm not sure that it's beloved. I think it's Wendy's, the place you end up going to because it's right there, announced that they're going to experiment with dynamic pricing. And you might be familiar with dynamic pricing. It's the thing that they use with Uber and Lyft and airlines and stuff like that, where the price changes based on demand. Uber will be like a certain price, and then in New York City, there'll be one drop of rain. And then you're like, do I get an Uber or do I just buy a Tesla for myself? Like, that's the difference in price with surge pricing.
Which you can buy through the Uber app.
Mm-hmm. Which you get, yeah. Tesla will come to
you. They give you that option now.
Yeah, they do. They do. It's being beta tested in New York City. Folks, the internet backlashed at this dynamic pricing for our favorite square burger. Benari, were you among the backlashers?
Well, what I was among, and of course, let me also just say before I begin that my opinions are my own and no way reflect those of the United States Army, United States Army Reserve, the U.S. government, coalition partners, real or imagined. So with that out of the way, let me also say, I'm against...
Because Benari, for those of you who are listening to the very first time, is an army man whose opinions do not reflect any
just
of that.
Just so
go
we're
ahead.
Clear, do not want anyone to misinterpret
no one
my
will
opinions.
Think. No one will think. Yeah.
But I think with we call it dynamic pricing, it's surge pricing, or more appropriately called price gouging. Like that's what we call. Like I don't. We put these fun boardroom, you know, names to things, but it's like they just want to. They're like, how do we price gouge people? But we call it dynamic pricing. So if you actually want the item, it's going to cost more. Oh, because right. They have, technically speaking, they've always had dynamic pricing. They have a dollar menu. If I don't feel like paying, you know, $2.50 or $3 for the big burger, I can get the like little junior burger and the little junior fries and the like one chicken nugget or whatever for $1. That's dynamic pricing. This is just straight up like, oh, you actually want like you want it as a meal? That's going to be, what time is it? Yeah, it's going to be $450. Like that's, it's insane that we let companies and corporations get away with this where it's like, I mean, first off, the fast food's not, whatever. I'm just going to be an angry old man. Like, right, the fast food's not even fast anymore. You got to wait 10 minutes. Like, fuck these people.
But also, isn't it like if they just did a little average of prices, it would work out to be the same anyway or something? You know what I mean? Like, can they just, I don't know.
You're not thinking about the profit margin is the problem.
I'm not. And they're truly working on the margin. So I don't think I don't know what the plan is, but like, I don't think they're thinking, oh, we can sell this burger for like $17 more, but like they can have, because they're a national chain, such intense profits by adding 20 cents or 50 cents to a burger. And that makes a huge difference for their bottom line. Andrew, what were you going to say?
Well, before I jump in, I need to clarify what I am and am not. I am the official spokesperson for the Pentagon. I am also Nagin Farsad's gynecologist. And everybody listening at home, I am your personal attorney and I have power of attorney. So I'm an attorney, a doctor, and official spokesman for the Pentagon.
And you speak for the trees. Yeah.
And I speak for the trees. All right. I'm gonna pose a question to the group here. Have y'all ever been to a happy hour?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Dynamic pricing. That's your point.
That's dynamic pricing. I am unbothered by this, but I need to clarify. I am a quarter Vulcan on my dad's side of the family. So I am not as emotionally reactive as the average human, and I acknowledge this. Dynamic pricing can go either way, right? So like if you go to a matinee performance, that's dynamic pricing. If you go to a happy hour, that's dynamic pricing. If you go get an Airbnb that's been reduced by 30% in January because no one wants to go to Sweden in January, that's dynamic pricing. So dynamic pricing is just the company adjusting supply and demand based on a given time. I don't really have any problem with this. Even like, I don't like the feeling of paying more for an Uber when it starts raining in New York, but I would rather have the option to pay more for an Uber than not get an Uber at all. And that's basically what's happening is when they do that surge pricing, they go, instead of paying the Uber driver $8 an hour, we'll give you guys $16 an hour if you want to come out of your house and drive more around in the rain. So I don't really have a big problem with it. Or I should say it's the least bad of two bad options.
But see, that's where I sort of where I start with as well, because the dynamic pricing already existed. That's the dollar menu, the stuff that like, we, you know, is cheaper to produce and the more expensive stuff subsidizes all of that, right?
To clarify, that's not, I don't believe that's dynamic pricing. That's just different products at different prices.
Well, no,
right?
So they're trying to move stuff. They're either trying to move stuff that didn't sell as well, so they put a lower price on it.
The early bird special is dynamic pricing.
Listen, in addition to a lawyer, doctor, gynecologist, I am also the only economist in America, and as such, I'm I'm not entirely confident on this, but I think generally dynamic pricing refers to the price of a specific product, not all of the prices. So the fact that a company would have different products at different prices, I think dynamic pricing refers to when the prices change for the product in a given
time.
But
what they're doing, in my opinion, is they're using the term dynamic pricing incorrectly because that's not what they're doing. They're not plain, like dynamic pricing just existed. That's what you did with all your prices. What you're doing is you're trying to sell the public on the idea that you're doing dynamic pricing while you price gouge them. And instead of saying, we're just raising prices based on how much the demand is in whatever particular area by whatever metric, we're not going to share with you because we're going to decide what that is based on how we're feeling today or what we want to move today. And because this is, you know, this is trade secrets, and this is you know, all of the privilege that comes along with that. So there's no transparency. There's just, we're going to charge you more for the thing that you actually came here for. That's what they're telling you. And then they want you to smile and shovel it down your fucking throat.
But also, because Andrew, I wonder, because I understand your Vulcan roots, but
yeah,
like,
thank you.
In the way that they plan on doing it is that they would have digital boards. So like, you could be standing in line and be like, I don't know anything about the Wendy's menu. I'm going to get the Wendy burger. And you look at the thing and it says $4 or whatever the fuck it is. And then you get there and it changes to $5. Yeah. How would you feel, Attorney General Heaton?
Thank you. Thank you. And it's a huge honor to now serve the American people as the Attorney General. I would feel the same as when I'm in a bar and the waiter or waitress comes by and goes, by the way, happy hour is going to end in 10 minutes. If you want to get another drink, you ought to do it now before the price goes up. I would feel like that.
But that's not what's happening here, though.
See, if you showed up to happy hour.
Listen, I appreciate the perspective that all of these companies are inherently evil and bad, and they're always only raising prices. But is it theoretically possible that, say, like Wendy's has looked at their line on a daily basis, and they go, we really don't have a lot of people come in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the hamburger gasoline style price outside crashes from $3 to $1.50. That might be the only way to get me to go to Wendy's. I haven't been to a Wendy's in like, I don't know, 24 years. But if I saw the hamburger go from $3.50 to 75 cents, I'd be like, well, now I'd be stupid not to buy it. So I think that could go either way. I think it's just supply and demand.
But see, I think this is bait and switch. What it is if I show up to Wendy's during the happy hour because I'm like, okay, I got $5. I know I can get a meal here for, you know, $4.97 or whatever. And then you go in and you're waiting in line, and then all of a sudden it's like $8 because more people showed up than they expected. That's what's happening. They want to raise the prices on things that people want. So that to me is not so much the supply and demand as it is bait and switch. You lured me in here with a price. You know, it'd be the same if I was pumping gas. If I go to the cheaper gas station and your lower price got me to drive into your gas station, and then just as I start to pump the gas, you jack it up 50 cents, I'd be pissed.
I think that you are already paying a different price. You're paying in time. So theoretically, if you go in at rush hour and it's completely crowded and they're charging $3 a burger and now they charge $4 a burger, you're going to have less time because less people are going to go there. But the main thing I would
I also think, Benar, you might be pissed because you have underlying anger issues that you haven't worked out vis-a-vis your parents, you know what I mean? Some other
Benar, is your mom's name
having.
Wendy? Just answer the question. Is your
look, if I'm
Wendy?
Going in, if I'm going into the fast food joint in the first place. At like off hours.
I heard a brilliant take on life the other day that I have incorporated into my life. I was talking to a young lady here in Austin, and she said, like, before she ever buys something, like she's going to buy a jacket or a purse or a laptop or something, she just asks herself, is this worth that many corn dogs? So she's figured out she can get a corn dog for $1, at Costco. So she goes, like, is this worth 40 corn dogs? And generally the answer is no. 40 corn dogs would be better. So what I suggest is before you go into Wendy's, just ask yourself, is this worth however many corn dogs I can buy with that money? And a lot of people will say no. I'm presently one of them. I've been in one of them 24 years.
And I'm fine with that. What bothers me is the idea that I can decide it's worth, okay,
the
maybe
bait
it's
and
worth.
Switch, I think the bait and switch part is really, I was like, well, let's move on and talk about wallets, which is a related subject. The wallet was developed in the 1300s as a pouch that you carry your little heavy coins in. I believe, Andrew, you still use a pouch.
Yeah.
like a kangaroo. He keeps his younglings in there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
They call me old marsupial back in the fraternity.
Now, In the modern day, that pouch is transformed into a wallet with its leather and its card slots and all of that stuff. Now, here's my question. In 2024, we largely pay for things digitally. Is the wallet or pouch a thing of the past? Andrew, how are you feeling about your pouch?
I had never thought about this until you sent me this email, and I'm thinking it's a good idea. So I have a wallet. I have one of those RFID wallets because my mother's paranoid and sent me one for Christmas. So I have like electro shielded credit cards and stuff in there. But then I thought about, like, I don't use Apple Pay, but one of my friends showed me this thing called, remember how I was all hip earlier? How you all were like, fun guy who knows all these, you know, very not dated Frasier references is the peak of his pop culture. One of my friends used Apple Pay the other day, and I was like, what black magic is this? You can just pay with your phone?
Hold on, Andrew, just the other day for the first time you saw someone use Apple Pay?
I live in Texas. We are 6 to 8 years behind in technology, 20 to 40 in women's
clearly.
Rights. it kind of makes sense to me. Like, because I'm guessing you probably can't digitize the IDs yet. Like, you can't just take a picture, but you could just slide it into the back of your phone, right? So I might try this for a week. It'd be one less thing to worry about.
There are digital license, whatever, but they're not necessarily the thing that is acceptable if you're in a fucking traffic situation or whatever. I don't know.
I love a wallet. I mean, I have like a slim wallet. It's more of like it's like the credit card case, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
it's got my ID. It's, you know, but I really like having it. And as we move more digital and like everything becomes just online pay and Apple Pay and you know, one click, I really like carrying cash. I fucking love carrying cash. I become so, like, it's the closest I feel like, if something goes down, I have cash. Like, like when the banks crash, when the Y2K bug finally hits, talk about trendy references. I'm like, okay, I got this. I'm ready to go.
You don't gotta recharge your wallet. If your wallet gets wet, it doesn't ruin your life.
It doesn't ruin my life.
Stranded in Branson, Missouri.
It's not going to give me an error message, and I'm going to get like a pinwheel of death.
Also, my feeling is like I think about this probably like thrice a week. I think to myself, Nagin, just give yourself cash, and then spend that, and then you'll know how much you're spending. I feel I fucking have no idea, and then I'll see a statement about how much I've spent, and I'll be like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to be, I want to live in a life where I'm not surprised anymore. And I still haven't done it, right? Because it does sound annoying to carry that much cash. But like, I feel like I do want to try this to see like if it changes my spending habits, because corn dogs is not working on me mentally. Yeah. I think I need a physical symbol of the money, money. I think I need physical money.
And I enjoy, like my wallet can hold maybe 3 to 4 corn dogs max.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm always able to actually do the ratio.
Someday we can dehydrate corn dogs and press them in a book like a butterfly or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But until that technology exists.
We're not, it's only 2024. We're not there yet.
But no, that is a really good point. Like when I was in New York, I actually did that. I would, because I had an ATM outside of where I worked, and every week I would get, you know, whatever the money was. And I was so much, right now I'm just using my credit card, and I don't, if it's a small purchase, my dumb monkey brain doesn't think about it. My dumb monkey brain goes, it's just
$3.
Right. Isn't
that and I'll do that all the time. And then at the end of the month, I'm like, how many times did I buy cocaine? How did I get it on my card?
And then you tip for cocaine those little square machines.
And you always know, how much cocaine you bought by how much bigger the tip gets.
I used to just come to this playground with cash to buy my cocaine. And now, you know,
those days are gone. It's a different world now.
Yeah, post-pandemic life, right? Hashtag.
Could you get an app that yells at you in the voice of like your high school principal or something because that's what I need right now. Is right now when I'm spending on my credit card, I'm not keeping track of it. But if the app went, you've spent $40 on slushies this week, what are you doing with your life? Like if AI could get into this and be really critical, maybe it could help. I want Marty McFly's
principal yelling at me. Just be like, you're a loser. Your father's a loser.
By the way, I feel like we just formed an app. If there's anyone in the Fake the Nation listenership who can actually help us build the app that was just formed with the voice, but I'm sure we can get Marty McFly's principal or coach. That doesn't seem like that's like the least of our problem. Like, okay. Like, and then the tech part, if we could just build the tech part, then I think, that's the small part of it that we need to figure out. And then we'll sell this app to people that can be yelled at. I think we should all be yelled at.
I like where we've landed on this. I like how
financial prudence through shouting. What we need is more shouting.
That's our takeaway. Right, that's our takeaway from this segment.
Mm-hmm. Folks, what is your takeaway from this segment? And how much do you want to hear the voice of Marty McFly's coach? That's the other question. These are the critical questions of our time until we learn how to dehydrate corn dogs and put them in wallets. Let's take a quick break and hear about our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue with more. Today's show is sponsored by Pros. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Pros custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. For like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised, controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level if you think about it. Just it makes common sense. Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready with topic number two, politics. It's general election season. I'm so sorry to report. And we're in a nostalgic episode right here on our 400th. So I think it's time to ask in this political segment the age-old question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? We read a little thing about this in Slate, and I thought it was an interesting question because it used to be so top of mind or whatever. They used to talk about that a lot. I feel like in the elections of my youth, in which I didn't really know what was going on. But where do is this something that you think about as a voter?
I try as hard as I can not to think about anything that happened in 2020. I think this time 4 years ago, I was eating Oreos out of a vase with a ladle in my bathtub, crying and watching Star Trek Picard. So I am much better now than I was 4 years ago.
Benari, do you ask yourself this question? Do you see family members? I mean, as we're gearing up for this general election, is this something that fucking anyone's talking about?
I mean, people aren't discussing it in that way, which to me is actually insane because,
right.
Because it's, to me, it's less about, it's a no-brainer, like it's obvious that we're all better off than we were 20 years ago, like that we were in 2020. Because you'd have to just, you know, you'd have to, you know, just memory hole 2020, which is what we've collectively decided to do, apparently.
For good reason.
For good reason, but then not to learn the lessons of how we got to 2020. Because to me, it's less about, like, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And more about, like, do you want it to get as bad as it got 4 years ago or possibly worse? Because we didn't think it could get that bad. And then it got bad. And then it got like the worst it could get as things compounded upon itself. Then we got out of it and we were like, instead of being like, let's just, you know, make a vow never to let that happen again. We all just were like, la, 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 we don't think about that time at all.
Yeah. And also, interestingly, numbers for all of, like, for CNN have dropped, for MSNBC have dropped, for the New York Times have dropped. Also, interestingly, not like I give a shit, but like numbers for Breitbart have dropped even more dramatically. Not that that was giving news, but just it's interesting because we are all doing the la 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 in a really aggressive way that's supported by the statistics of readership and listenership, by the way, to political podcasts like Fake the Nation. I mean, we saw a decline and then it kind of resumed a little bit, but like, it was like I did it. I fucking got Biden in office. Now, let us never speak of this again. Like, this was so. And I mentioned this on last week's episode with Judah Friedlander and Gabe Malika, that I was just like, I don't know, guys, the vibes around this election are so weird. It's like everyone is concerned, but they just don't want to talk about it at all. And we had a reporter on, Lila Raptopoulos from the Financial Times. She covers the culture beat, but she was saying from her political reporter friends that their readership on horse race politics has gone down noticeably. So I think you're right, Benari, that we just and Andrew, like, none of us want to think about you in that bathtub with the Oreos.
No one. No one. Just
nationally, nobody.
Picture a meerkat, just a bearded meerkat, laying in that tub watching Picard season one.
I was going to say even Picard got better. Even Picard got better. Picard, yeah. This last season was.
Now I just look like a pregnant meerkat. Yeah. I've gotten worse, at least physically.
I was going to say, you look so bad today.
Thank you. I know.
And I'm glad you, brought
it up. I look like if you hauled out Jim Henson from the grave. I'm just a corpse of Jim Henson reanimated.
Just more really current references, folks.
I will say, and maybe this is being a little too optimistic, but I think if we're to look at it from the optimistic perspective, there is this sense of, we know it's not a horse race. Like, the typical politics of an election year don't apply here because there is no horse race. It's not, you know, oh, who's ahead, who's behind. We know what it's going to be. We already know what November is going to be. And it's almost shining this bright light on us as the American political system, which got so bloated and lengthy and overwrought, and there was just so much cash being made of, like, you know, keeping you glued to the 24-hour news cycle. And people are like, I actually kind of already know. So if you just leave me the fuck alone, I'm going to do my job in November. Let me live my life until then.
Right.
We don't have
to talk about it
because nothing is
going to,
like, it's
Benari,
not the usual thing.
Yeah.
You don't think that most Americans they haven't made up their mind on Biden and Trump yet. They're like, gosh, I just need to know what they think about energy policy. I feel like these very obscure people who are historically opaque and
To anyone still on the fence, but you,
Ken Bone, is still figuring out what he's going to do. Remember that guy?
Yeah, you're either, I worry about what COVID has done to your brain, or you're just an attention seeker at this point. You're just like, I need the cameras on me. How am I going to vote?
I like that. I like that. I think part of the reason, going back to your earlier point, Nagin, about, like, why people feel uncomfortable, is we're now on our third presidential cycle where people are voting more out of opposition to a candidate than because they like their own candidate. So you go back to very relevant elections, say, like, Mondale versus Reagan. People just, you know, the people that voted for Mondale did it because they liked him. Where, like, a few years later, people voted for Clinton because they liked Clinton. There were still people that voted because they hated Dole or they hated Clinton or whatever. But that changed in 2016. The majority of Trump voters voted because they hated Hillary Clinton. The majority of Hillary voters were scared of Donald Trump. That repeated in 2020. It's probably going to repeat this time based on all numbers. So it's this weird thing where we're voting against somebody more than we're voting for somebody.
Right. Well, let me point another thing out. This is from the piece, by the way, in Slate. I mentioned it's by Nitish Pawa, and it's called "Did 2020 Ever Even Happen?" I thought it was a really great piece. And he writes, Biden. So he basically says that Biden comes in with a promise of being boring. Right. Like, that was one of the big attractions for me.
Captain Benadryl.
Besides his hot. Right. Exactly. In addition to his hot bod, I was voting for him because he was going to be boring. And that he was going to run the country in a quiet way, the way it had been run basically my entire life. And then the writer writes, the problem was the kind of madcap, exhausting political engagement that Trump brought to the fore does not yield to a void. Biden's choice to not emphasize his presence has consequentially made him the least culturally relevant president of my lifetime, a chief executive with no definitional stamp on the zeitgeist.
And I understand that feeling, and I understand there's a very interesting thing that's happened during the Biden presidency too, which is, I don't think there's ever been more of a disconnect between what is actually happening and the reality of a presidency and how much has been accomplished policy-wise, despite unbelievable, overwhelming opposition, continued opposition, and unprecedented, like, global events all happening at the same time, and this convergence of events, and the way in which he's handled it versus how people just feel. Like, the vibes are off, but when you say, like, but what would you like? You're like, well, he did that. So, you know, it's like, oh, you want student loan? You want him to tackle student loans. He does that. The Supreme Court strikes it down. He has still found ways using the system and whatever executive powers to forgive student loans and keeps working at it. The amount of things he's been able to get done despite workarounds, he got, you know, with no Republican support whatsoever, he got the infrastructure bill passed, which 2 years later we are reaping the benefits for, just in time for an election, by the way. Very smart, you know, savvy political move as well, that the thing that you like push through and got passed.
He gets no credit for basically any of it.
You know, the way he's been able to dance through the hurricane of foreign policy right now and thread a needle with people, the fact that he has Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Israel, while Gaza's happening, all like kind of negotiating continually, the fact that like we have the UAE and Saudi Arabia now saying that they're in favor of a two-state solution, I don't think anyone realizes what a massive shift in 75 years of foreign policy that is, that alone. And these are things that he brings to the table that is, it's not just not appreciated. It's kind of like, I just wish, it's kind of like people look at that and like, yeah, but I just wish Biden were someone else. You know,
I don't know what the guy can do.
I think.
I mean, if he was Ryan Gosling,
yes, if he was
and
Ryan
he could
Gosling.
Do the number at the Oscars, right? I think then we would be,
Part of the rancor that's going on right now that I'm seeing, and again, I'm 100% with you. I wanted Captain Benadryl to just give Benadryl to the American people and calm down.
Yeah.
And I, like, somebody said, I don't remember who it is, somebody said the best country in the world is one where you're not afraid to drink the water and you can't remember the name of the president. Like, to Canada's credit, 10, 15 years ago when I started traveling and I would meet Canadians, I'd go, who's your prime minister? And they'd think about it. It would take them a second and they'd go, Stephen Harper. But they would pause. And I was like, what a blessed country where this is not on the forefront of your mind. And I think that.
Or what a fucking dumb country. You guys don't know who your fucking prime minister is.
Go to fucking school.
We have like Luce Libre in terms of our political process. What I worry about is I worry that Trump is not the cause of this, but a symptom of it, and that it's going to keep happening. And that is kind of where my gut is. I think that the last 20, 30 years, there's been this weird shift where politics has become almost like a religious clash, where like I want politics to be boring and procedural. I think it should be like, hey, we all agree we're trying to get to a good place and we're figuring out how to organize the parking lot to yield the most cars. And let's have a fight about that and go get a drink, right? And it's like parties have become people's political identity. And I think for that reason, it doesn't matter how nice or like whoever the president is can exacerbate that quality, but people are still going to get so worked up about it, even if it's a calm person in the White House.
Speaking of getting worked up, let's talk quickly about Katie Britt.
That this podcast is drenched in the blood of patriots.
Yeah. But like with one of those ASMR type things, like you're all like slightly sexual.
I think we all actually kind of just saw a glimpse inside like the closed door GOP meetings when they're just doing their freaky ASMR sex stuff.
By the way, someone, I can't remember which of these senators, said, oh, we chose her because she's a housewife. And it's like, you mean this decorated lawyer who's been practicing for,
She's a senator.
I'm like, she's a fucking senator. But also,
head of the Chamber of Commerce of Alabama.
So for the people who don't know what I'm talking about, she gave the response to the State of the Union. By the way, I thought the State of the Union was rather delightful. So there's that. But Katie Britt gives the response. She's in her kitchen, and she talks about how Biden is in a bubble or whatever because he doesn't do drop-offs at school or whatever. And I was just sort of like, but aren't you fucking also in that bubble? Like, you're a senator. What are you talking about? Like, no, I mean, it's fine to be like, he's old and it's been, you know, 40 years since he did a drop-off, but like, you have to also recognize your own bubblemanship, you know?
My husband and I are frightened. Your husband and you are going to be just fine.
Yeah.
You're fine. You do not need to worry. Other people might, yeah.
Well, so then the big scandal that erupted from her response, besides the... I was trying to think if Rubio's drinking water was worse than Katie Britt's high school theater,
and don't forget
best supporting actor.
Don't forget Joe Kennedy's poor chapstick incident.
Poor chapstick incident, that's right. He looked like he was sweating on his fake chin or whatever. I mean, I do think Rubio's was still like a little like just weirder because it was a scramble for water and we all had to wait and it was just like, but it was live, you know. That was so weird. But Katie Britt's performance, the thing that actually emerged right after was not just that she did too much, but that she also lied very clearly about an incident where she talked about a sex worker that she spoke to that had been, you know, suffered, and it's because of Biden and all this stuff. It turns out it didn't happen during the Biden administration. It happened during the George W. Bush administration 1 kabillion years ago. It also didn't happen in the United States. It happened in Mexico. So it was like everything was true.
Really
except
splitting
for
hairs
most
here,
of it,
Nagin. This sounds to me like it's. I don't see what the problem is.
Tomato,
here.
Tomato. Here.
Yeah.
I mean,
sex worker, Mexico. I got it. But Biden's bad. Okay, that was my takeaway. Okay.
So I mean, I'm just shocked because it also feels like an own goal. Like you didn't need to say any of those things.
I don't think they ever need to say. Like I don't get why we do. I don't think we should have State of the Union addresses. They strike me as this weird like British attempt to create a monarch that I don't think we need to be doing anyway. And I really don't understand why we do the rebuttals because like the State of the Union address. I get it. You're the president. You've spent your entire life trying to get to this point. You've ruined your family. You've done all these things. And I just want the... I get why you're doing it. The rebuttal, though, am I right in thinking that we only remember the ones that, like, screw up, we make fun of? Like, I don't remember a rebuttal ever turning the American sentiment. I don't really know what the point is.
You couldn't name it. In fact, if anyone remembers your rebuttal, you fucked up.
You're shooting for neutral and unmemorable. That's the best case scenario.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think, look, I do think like this, the idea of the State of the Union is kind of cool. It's like of your presidential duties, that's kind of like, I'm actually of the belief like that's one of the few times we should hear from the president. Otherwise, like something bad has happened.
Otherwise, shut the fuck up. Yeah. But like, let's hear from you this one time a year. That
because
sounds great. I see
you know,
that.
Like kind of, you know, Heaton, what you were saying earlier, I actually believe like we get too much into the weeds of the superstardom of our elected officials, and I view them as like what they should be, which is civil servants. We've hired you to do a job for a certain period of time. Do your job. Every so often, tell me about the job you're doing. You listen to the constituents because it's representative democracy. So you got to kind of do what we put you in office to do. And if we don't like it, we get you out of office. So there's a balance there. But instead, what we've turned the American system into is a reality TV show, which is why we got a reality TV star as the president. Because it's like that's how we rewired ourselves to think that everything has to be like that. And that that in the absence of drama, you know, we'll fill that void with whatever drama we can think of. And also
we've also filled the place that local news and local politics used to take. We filled that with national politics, which is generally useless for you as an individual. Arguing over the left turn on Maplewood
is more important.
Yeah.
It creates an angry wedge issue, whereas you should instead be talking about, you know, golf cart lanes or whatever.
People
talk about, you know how people are always talking about golf cart lanes.
Where you are, or like potholes if you're like a real American. But yeah, of course, golf carts and potholes.
Well, Nagin, I think you're 100%. I agree with both of you, by the way. Like I am very uncomfortable with how the presidency has transformed over the last 100 years when I got started based on my hip references to this program. Like the president's a civil servant. servant. He or she is the top bureaucrat.
Right.
And it is their job to run a government. Like, we should look at them the same way we look as like the head of the postal service. I don't look at the postmaster general as like the chaplain of America who embody, like, I don't need a chaplain. I don't need the embodiment of the American people. I don't want a sovereign. I don't want a head of state. I'm happy to defer to like Queen Elizabeth or something. But
yeah, this is a weird thing to be like, I don't want a sovereign. I'm just going to defer to the queen.
Well, okay. I'm getting into the weeds here. Let me revisit.
I think you're saying like the ceremonial queen who doesn't have real power. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. I think it's dangerous. Okay. This is a broader topic. I think it's dangerous to combine head of government with head of state.
I need you to clean up your words.
Thank you. Thank
Andrew, because that was very confusing.
It would be much better for the American people, I think, to have a different head of state and head of government, the way they do in Germany, Ireland, the United Kingdom, and a lot of other countries.
Right,
where the person who represents the country and meets diplomats and cuts ribbons is not the person who sends you off to die.
And Andrew, let me ask you this question to close off the segment. Just putting aside all of the monarchical discourse that just happened to us.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Andrew, you are neither Republican nor Democrat.
I'm an independent. That's right.
You're an independent. Are you wooed by No Labels, RFK, Cornel West, rumored Liz Cheney or Larry Hogan candidacies? Are you wooed by any of those forces? Like, when it comes time for you to pull the lever, how do you see that going down?
I am a true independent, which is to say that I'm up in the air every time. So I think most independents, and that's now about half the electorate, like the independents are now outpacing Republicans and Democrats combined, I think. I think most independents are basically reliable Republican or Democrat voters who just don't like their party for good reason. I think both of the parties suck really bad. And that's emblematic of how bad they suck that so many of their reliable voters won't even associate with them. I think about 80% of independents are in that category. About 20% is what I am, which I don't know how I'm going to vote from year to year. I'm up in the air. I would be very, very, very surprised if I voted for Donald Trump. It would be very surprising to me. But outside
of
that,
are you going to do a write-in candidacy for the queen, the deceased Queen Elizabeth?
For me at this point, it would probably be me looking at Biden if No Labels does it, or depending on how crazy the Libertarian candidate is. Those are probably the three that I'm most likely to look at. I met RFK Jr. the other day and thought he was very good on some things. I think he's very good on freedom of speech. He seems to understand regulatory capture. He seems good on civil liberties. So possibly. So I actually haven't made up my mind yet. Yep. True.
Super weird on vaccines.
Super weird.
Yeah.
But no, I need to know who the candidates are going to be before I can make up my mind. Like, I could vote for Biden, but until I know who the other options are, I'm up in the air.
And I think that actually gets to a little bit of people's unease with this particular political cycle, because it's the very first one that you have a former president running against the current president, it's a redo of it's an exact redo. We haven't had that. We haven't had an exact redo of the previous election. So a lot of the fun has been taken out of the political cycle. But I will say there's an opportunity here. This is how we get back to Canada. Canada, like, you get basically like 3 weeks for like a primary and like 3 weeks for the general election, and then it's over and everybody moves on with their lives. And I think that our political cycle is way too long to run for office. We end up having people who are running for office for as soon as they get into office, you know, and it's like, it's just this constant cycle. And like, the primaries start earlier and earlier, and sometimes they start 2-3 years out to raise money and get on the airwaves, and we're going to get the thing. And it's like, if we just condense that, there's got to be a balance between vetting candidates and finding good candidates and then just like fucking voting for them and then moving on. Because I think what happens is, the longer you spend time with them and you get really enamored with someone that you like, your happiness in the election lives or dies by how well that one candidate does each time. But also, we're just living too long in an election, because then it just gets like, I feel like we just went through this.
I'm in an election all the time. Yeah. Folks, let me know, where are you? Are you wooed by any of the other candidates? Are you just waiting for this to be over? let me know. All right, let's get into it with topic number three. We read a piece in the Times by Melissa Kirch about why we can't stop rushing, and I want to dig into her thoughts. But first, I want to ask, like, what is your relationship to rushing? Do you feel like you're always in a rush? As I am, because I'm literally looking at the clock. We have a hard out. We need to rush through this segment. Andrew, thoughts?
Yeah, and I have way less responsibility in my life than Nagin. I think you have people in your life that love you and you love them, but like you have to take care of them and stuff. Not me. I just got a dog and he doesn't even like me. And yet, with such little responsibility in my life, I still feel incredibly rushed. And I've thought about this. The only two times I truly relax are when I'm camping or I'm on a sleeper train. For whatever reason, when I'm on a sleeper train,
specifically.
Like you're in Europe and you're like, oh, maybe I'll go to Czechoslovakia, a still existent country from the 90s. I will be on the sleeper train and my brain goes, you know what? You're in a foreign country. You're going 75 miles an hour. That's enough. Just read a book. Whereas when I'm just pottering around my house, I'm like, I have so many things to do and I feel kind of guilty. And then when I go camping, I find that when I'm in the woods, My brain, like, I become tiny and my brain doesn't care about email and life gets back in perspective. But the rest of the time, I'm I think better than a lot of my friends in terms of work-life balance. But I still wish I could at least, like, I need to keep track this year of how many times I get an email that's important that I respond to it within an hour, because I suspect in my life it's probably less than 5 times a year, and yet I will compulsively check my email every single day.
That's a really great exercise for us to all figure out in a week how many emails are really actually urgent. Benari, what is your relationship to rushing?
I mean, having lived in New York City for, you know, over a decade, rushing was like a constant. And then you immediately find, like, when you leave New York City, you're like, no, not everyone lives like this. It doesn't have to be this way. But I feel also as an East Coaster, I was predisposed to rushing around, right? Everything was, you know, okay, it's got to get done. It's got to get done. And I got to say, so I was in Los Angeles for about 3 or 4 years. And the West Coast time, man, what a great time shift. Because I feel like on the West Coast, everyone's like, look, we're already 3 hours behind the people who are making the calls. So fuck it. Just take your time. You know what? You're going to be in traffic. It's fine. Nobody cares about the, nobody cares.
You need to check out New Orleans. Like, imagine that only with really high humidity.
Yeah.
And people are like, I don't know, wake up at 10.
Yeah.
Have a drink.
It's still going to be there when you get to it. So I don't know. There's something very freeing about the ability to take your time to do a thing. And I think that it's also just an order of learning how to prioritize, right? Like, I don't need to get everything done everywhere all at once at one time.
And as you describe California and New Orleans, I feel a sense, like a feeling of disgust, like, just come up in me of like, why aren't they being more productive?
Sure.
You know what I mean? I do, like, I am, I don't know. It's not, and I grew up on the West Coast. It's like, even then I was just sort of like, what are we doing, guys? Mm-hmm. Let's fucking get it together. Mm-hmm. Like, as a child, I thought that everything needed to, like,
You were bringing in like a timer
better.
Going like, guys, we've been working on blocks for 15 minutes now. Yeah. Let's move on to Legos. Come on. Let's get our stuff
like
together.
You're counting down. You're like, look, best case scenario, I got like 81 to like 98 years.
I got a
chutes
and ladder at 3 o'clock. I could push back chutes and I could put back the chutes. Maybe not the ladders. Let's get this done, kids.
That was me.
Yeah.
Yes. That was me. And it's funny because what I wish for myself and for America, and I know that everybody wonders what I wish for America. I wish that we could kind of toggle back and forth between times where rushing is, I'd say, good for us, like productive and useful. Like, we get shit done. We invent things. We fucking innovate shit. We fucking do incredible works of art and commerce and blah, blah, blah. And that happens with a little fucking bit of urgency, right? And then I wish we could just also easily turn it off and be like, and now I don't give a shit about anything. And that's what I wish for us all.
So we've all lived in New York. Benari and I have left New York. And I'm curious. One of the things that I noticed while I was there is that I think because New York, it's a wonderful city, but it's a tough place to live. There's so much stimulus going on at all times in a way that really doesn't exist anywhere else in the country. You're more compact. It's very expensive. I found that when I was there, I would feel kind of guilty when I was relaxing because my brain would go, is this why you're here? Just to hang out in your apartment? I mean, it's real tough. Like, and so it did compel me to go out and do stuff. Sure. I was a lot more productive. But I also don't want to like back in Oklahoma where I'm from, most of my family that's not in prison is farmers. And man, those people, like, I don't know if you know any farmers, but they wake up at like 4:30 and like mow scarecrows or whatever they do. And like that, I don't want to go that direction either. I want to be like right in the middle. I want to wake up at about 8 or 9 a.m. And then like, I think the main thing is I need to work on self-discipline. What I'm now starting to do is I put a long cord on my phone and I throw it far enough that I can't reach it from the bed. So if my parents need to call me for some reason, I'll get it. Because, you know, we're getting to that age. I need to keep my phone on. But at the same time, I really don't want to look at my phone first thing in the morning because I don't want to kick off the day by reacting.
It's like on a bungee cord or something.
I accidentally ordered.
It's like a
ordered,
lever and pulley system.
I have so many more questions now than answers.
I accidentally ordered an 8-foot cord for my iPhone. I didn't mean to. It was blue. I picked it based on color.
Now I have to use it.
It's eight feet long, and so I put it on the floor, and then I kind of shuffle it like a puck,
and it spins around, and it goes about
6 feet away from my door to where I can't get it anymore. But at least it keeps me from when I wake up, first thing, I don't touch my phone.
Last thoughts on rushing, Benari, because we have to rush because of me.
Well, I just, there's so many times I've confused what I thought was urgency, you know, with, I just planned this poorly. And so now I have to like cram everything in and get it all done because I didn't plan this well. And so
there's also that.
So I think like that was like a good learning lesson for me, like upon self-reflection of like, I don't actually have to be rushing if I gave myself the extra time to like do this thing first.
Oh my God, I love that point because I think the big thing, and especially like if you do live in New York and you do want to have like a relaxing life in New York, what I do think I sometimes have is you want to schedule enough time for the dilly-dallying and for like just taking your fucking time to get somewhere and taking your fucking time to like do something. But at the same time, I do think everyone should be productive and like get shit done, and I don't want to drag
just
it out. You know,
so build
like,
yourself
I'm a
little
fan.
Build yourself in an extra 30 minutes with whatever it is you have to do. If you're
whatever it is you're doing. I love that. All right, folks, let me know. What is your relationship to rushing? I love like thinking about this kind of shit. So thank you for letting me do that on the 400th episode. And my God, that's the end of the show. That's the end of our 400th episode. And what I would really love is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all of the wonderful things you do. You've both been on several jillion times. So they already fucking know. But tell them again in case they forgot. Benari, where do they find you?
At Benari Lee on the socials. You'll find me.
Find him, folks. Find him. And if you could see him do stand-up, go see him do stand-up. And Andrew, where do they find you?
I host a podcast called The Political Orphanage, so-called because I'm an independent and I'm tired of the red team versus blue team slap fight. So I do a lot of policy deep dives and interview authors and just try and figure out what's happening and how to make things make things work better. That's The Political Orphanage.
Folks, tune into The Political Orphanage. It is such a fun show. I've been on it. I can first give you a firsthand account of its delightfulness. And you know where to find me and all the things that I do. I have just updated my website with upcoming performances. By the way, if you're going to the TED conference, hey, I'm going to be doing some stand-up there. So come find me in Vancouver in April. But also, I'm going to be in Pittsburgh with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm going to be in Chicago. I'm going to be doing some shit in San Francisco. Anyway. Point is, I've actually updated my website for the first time in my life. And then also, you know where to find me on all of the socials at Nagin Farsad, a name that's both easy to pronounce and spell. I was gifted that by my parents. On this 400th episode, thank you so much for listening. I'm so grateful to all of you, especially the ones who've been sticking this out for fucking going into our third election season. Wow.
Incredible work.
Thank you so, so much. And thank you. Again, subscribe to us on YouTube. Thanks so much for all the reviews you've been leaving. Keep them coming because it helps people find the show. Go to patreon.com/NagineFarsad to support the show for just like measly little shekels. You can do that and get bonus episodes of the show. And you can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com for any questions, comments, concerns. I love getting your emails. There's been a couple of emails asking about if we're going to talk about Gaza, and we will, and I'm working out the right time and the right who's and what's. So thank you so much for emailing about that. And also, that's it. Fucking that's it. Happy 400th. We will be back in your earballs next week. That was a HeadGum Podcast.